Hey, motherfucker.
Welcome to Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. I'm David Klink.
And I am Troy Harkin.
And this is our Bruce Willis retrospective. Where there's a Willis, there's a way.
What you talking about, Willis?
We're recording it on Wednesday, April 6th, 2022, and it is scheduled for broadcast sometime during the summer of 2022. There is no episode number attached to this episode since we do not know when we will release it. We do not have a special guest for this episode. Before that, Troy will give us a spoiler alert.
Many, many spoilers to come, so I'm pushing the spoiler alert button.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
All righty.
Thanks, Troy. We are recording the session via Zoom. In the interest of transparency, Troy and David, well, David's me, have known each other for a long time, and we're not going to introduce our special guest. I'm going to start with my quotes, which I like to do during most of the episodes. Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi is a look back to when we fell in love with the speculative genre, to recall these times with fondness and affection. I've got two quotes. One is an actual quote from Bruce Willis to Us Magazine, issue 249. Bruce Willis said, "You can't undo the past, but you can certainly not repeat it."
I like it.
And I have another quote. This one is from an article called "In Praise of the Irreplaceable Bruce Willis, Hollywood's Golden Boy of Cinema" by Kevin, posted end of March 2022 on the website newswwc.com. That's newswwc.com. Lest we all forget, it should go without saying that Willis has been in some of the most fantastic films of all time, from Pulp Fiction to The Sixth Sense and beyond. He can do horror and action, science fiction and drama, all with a cutting sense of humor and gravitas that remains unmatched. There just are so many moments that make Willis such a deceptively dynamic performer. He plays characters that draw you in with a wicked charm and others who blow you away with a genuine sense of heart. In all his roles, Willis instills each film with an energy that could bring any story to life and leave you in awe of just what he brings to the table. He is irreplaceable and will always be a presence all his own. So Troy and I are going to look at the career of Bruce Willis from the genres we care most about, the genres that we cover in our podcast, which are science fiction, fantasy, horror, and their combinations of sub-genres. Troy, is there anything that you would like to add?
Well, I will say that, Dave, you impressed me the way you can throw something together, because we were talking just a few hours ago about, hey, you want to do this? You want to fly by the seat of our pants and do this? And you did a great job there of getting an intro together. But yeah, in light of the recent news about Bruce Willis being diagnosed with aphasia and that he would be retiring from filmmaking immediately, I thought that it might be appropriate to put something together, like a little special retrospective that would look back primarily on his work in genre, in the genre genres that we cover, but also his sort of impact through his greater body of work as well. So yeah, I'm glad we're here to throw this together and to share in the career of Bruce Willis with folks.
Yeah, I'm glad that you had this idea and contacted me, and we've sort of thrown this together. So apologies for any faux pas or any momentary lapses. We're both getting, you know, we are two, in quotes, old farts. So sometimes we forget things or make one thing recently in a recent podcast. I was mentioning how much I love the film Total Recall, and I was referring to Kuatu as Quaid. And of course, Quaid was a Schwarzenegger character. So sometimes, you know, we make mistakes and we have to own up to it. And then I definitely have to see the film again. So what I was hoping
yeah.
to do.
I was just going to say, Dave, in terms of our, if we're doing mea culpas, a friend of mine was saying how much, and again, we're not sure when this episode will air, but we recently, at the time of recording, did a fantasy countdown. And I included being John Malkovich.
Malkovich. Yeah, during the episode, you kept saying Malkovich, and yeah. I would correct you and say, why are you saying Malkovich?
Please. Yeah, smack me around. If I do that again. Because, my friend Pat was saying, it was driving him nuts every time I would say Malkovich. And I told him I promised I would write on the chalkboard 100 times, it is pronounced Malkovich. It is pronounced Malkovich. We are prone to error being human. Sorry, David, I sort of cut you off with that little bit.
No, don't worry. I thought that you would start, because what we're doing is we're looking at Bruce Willis, and we are going to try to concentrate on the sort of science fiction, fantasy, horror, but we should actually just start at the beginning. This should almost be a two-part episode, actually, but we should start at the beginning. And even though some episodes were a bit odd and interesting, and there's a series I never watched. I don't know, Troy, if you watched Moonlighting or not. That's sort of where we were first really introduced to, and there were some cool episodes, from what I understand, that did push, boundaries and were sort of outside the box. So do you have anything to say about Moonlighting at all?
Well, I wasn't an in-depth fan of the series, but I certainly like Cybill Shepherd. And
well, did you want to mention the Twilight Zone? Because if we're doing this oldest to most...
Yeah, and I think it's funny, because I was looking at my notes. This may not be right, but I believe the Twilight Zone episode may have predated Moonlighting. Because I have Moonlighting as 85 to 89, and my note for the Twilight Zone episode was from 1984. Now, when we say the Twilight Zone, there may be some of you that either don't know or do not remember that it was relaunched in the 1980s. There was a huge sort of renaissance for the Twilight Zone and all things anthology in the early 80s for a number of reasons. There were a few films that started to do it. The Twilight Zone went into syndication at a really broad level, so it exposed people like myself to the series who, weren't alive during the original run. And so CBS decided they would reboot the series. And Harlan Ellison, the award-winning sci-fi writer, was the script editor for the show, or script supervisor. And so the first episode was an adaptation of one of his stories, Shatterday, and that's from the collection of Ellison stories called Shatterday.
Some push for what they need. Some push for what they want. Some people, like Peter J. Novins, just push. If they do it hard enough and long enough, something might just push back from the Twilight Zone.
And it's about this character who's sort of a yuppie, success at all costs type of thing person. And he experiences this week where basically, first of all, he is locked out of his apartment, and then he tries to call his girlfriend at his apartment, but he answers.
Damn.
What?
Dialed the number I know best instead of Jamie's office. I dialed my own number. Did you ever do that?
Hello?
Johnny, I need that ice.
I'm sorry. I must have dialed the wrong number.
What number did you want?
Klondike 56189.
This is Klondike 56189. Who are you calling?
Nah, I must have dialed wrong. This can't be Klondike 56189.
Yeah? That's the number you've reached. Who did you want?
I wasn't calling anybody at this number. Wait a minute. Are you sure this is Klondike 56189?
I think I know my own number, pal.
Who are you? Peter Novins. Who are you?
I'm Peter Novins.
And as the episode goes on, basically this sort of dastardly character is replaced by a better version of himself. And in the episode, Willis plays both the good and the bad version of the character. And he does a great job. I mean, it was a really nice way to kick off the relaunch of the 80s Twilight Zone. And I do have that one, and I'll try to include a clip.
Why are you doing this to me?
Got it all wrong, Novins. You did this to yourself.
That sounds great.
So Willis was offered the role in Die Hard as John McClane. Die Hard came out in 1988, and a number of different people were offered the script prior to him, including like the heavy hitters of action. Clint Eastwood was offered the script. He turned it down. Stallone was offered the script. He turned it down. Schwarzenegger was offered the script. He turned it down. And, you know, Willis jumped at it. And supposedly when the trailer aired, people were laughing because it was like, oh, it's that guy from Moonlighting. What's going on here? So the producers were kind of worried and had no idea that it would become the cash cow and the classic that it did. And, you know, and this is the thing about Willis. It's amazing that nowadays we think of him, and in my mind, I put him in a category with the alpha male bad boys of film. You know, so he is in a small group with people like Bogart, Clint Eastwood, Charles Bronson. You know, and unlike people like Stallone and Schwarzenegger, those four were not like built up and super muscular. It was all about just their presence, their on-screen presence, where you had this sense of, I don't want to fuck with this guy because he's going to throw me off a building or something, you know? And that's pretty exclusive company.
Die Hard is considered one of the possibly the greatest film, but certainly in the top 5 or 10 action films of all time.
And it totally reinvented the action film.
Yes, and that also helps when you have someone like Alan Rickman there, well written, well acted. The whole thing was just, and even the sequel, the first sequel, the Die Hard 2 with the airport at the airport, was really strong as well. So
yeah,
certainly, if you're going to have that film and the second one, and you're the main actor in that, you can basically write your ticket at that point.
And people forget, you know, they being however many years it is down the road now, almost 40 years, I suppose, you forget that he was not a movie star at the time. And Rickman also was, this was his first film, basically. You look at it now and you go, oh man, Alan Rickman and McClane is Bruce Willis. This is amazing. But you know, this was not a sure thing at the time. Anyway. So yeah, I guess before 12 Monkeys, then we have, Die Hard 2, Bonfire of the Vanities. Pulp Fiction was 1994, where he played the character Butch Coolidge. Die Hard with a Vengeance was with Samuel L. Jackson. And then we hit 12 Monkeys. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, just a bit. It's one of the strongest of the films. Based on IMDb rating, the only ones that are the only one above it on his list of films that I have here is his genre films. There's about 15 of them. The only one that's higher rated is The Sixth Sense. And an even rating on 12 Monkeys is Sin City. So that's how good a film 12 Monkeys is. It was such an unusual. Now, you recall the director, right?
Of which? Oh, of 12 Monkeys?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
And
so that's, you know, got his touch.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing, you know, when you look at Gilliam's filmography. You know,
yeah, we almost did a podcast episode just on Terry Gilliam because
for sure.
There. And 12 Monkeys, I would just have to watch it again because it's been so long since I've seen it. And I understand, you know, with the time travel element, the fact that it's really says something about today, because there was that pandemic and that issue in 12 Monkeys that they're trying to resolve. And here we are in April of 2022. Mm-hmm. We recorded this episode, even though this episode will be broadcast later, that we're coming out of a 2-year long epidemic where 800,000 plus Americans have died from the COVID and everything that's gone through it. That, you know, something like 12 Monkeys still has resonance.
5 billion people died in 1996 and 1997. Almost the entire population of the world. Only about 1% of us survived.
Are you going to save us, Mr. Cole?
How can I save you? This already happened. I can't save you. Nobody can. I am simply trying to gather information to help the people in the present trace the path of the virus.
We're not in the present now, Mr. Cole?
No. 1990 is the past. This already happened. That's what I'm trying to...
Mr. Cole, you believe 1996 is the present then? Is that it?
No, 1996 is the past too. Listen to me. What I need to do is make a telephone call. I can straighten this all out if I make a telephone call.
Who would you call? Who would straighten everything out?
The scientist. Oh. They'll want to know that they sent me to the wrong time. I can leave a voicemail message that they monitor from the present. Can I just make one telephone call, please? Please.
And one of the great things about 12 Monkeys, too, is that we have both Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis trying to show that they have more breadth than just these. Well, in the case of Pitt, that he's just sort of like the male model. And with Willis, that he's more than just the action star, which he'd only been for a few years at that point. But a great vehicle for both of them.
Absolutely.
And then we have one of my favorite films, The Fifth Element, where he plays Corbin Dallas. And that was, it's funny because you and I both often mix up, it's Luc Besson. Yeah. And not Denis Villeneuve, but I am prone to, screwing those two up. I just love that film. I will watch it whenever it's on. It's just like, it has this energy that flows. It's got a great look to it. Ian Holm is wonderful in it.
Gary Oldman, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, at some point we should look at the career of Gary Oldman, because there's so much great genre stuff there as well.
Yes. The Fifth Element is just one rousing story that just goes. The pacing is fantastic. Those unusual aliens that are hobbling, you know, it's left to right as they go towards the pyramid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The actual ending. We've talked about The Fifth Element, because I think The Fifth Element certainly appeared in your top 10, I think, in science fiction films. I'm trying to remember if it was in mine, but certainly it rated very highly because it is that good. Even for people who don't or cannot stand opera and cannot stand that style of music, were captivated by the scene where the person is singing that opera song, that the person that I think has a blue skin.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, we're just doing this from, you know, off the top of our head, so I can't remember the name of the character in that.
Holy amnesia!
Every aspect of it. It's just a great action film, but with a lot of heart, and it's very powerful in emotion, what the actual Fifth Element is.
Yeah. I think if my perfect sci-fi film that would appeal to my sensibilities would be a mashup of The Fifth Element and Brazil. And I mentioned in one of our recent shows how I always have to be careful that I'm not cribbing something that was already in Brazil because I'm so influenced by it. Well, that's true of The Fifth Element as well. And that's why, for me, the perfect sci-fi vehicle would be a combination somehow of Fifth Element and Brazil.
Yeah, and the actress, I'm trying to remember her name now, that played Lilu.
Mila Jovovich? Is it Vich or Vic? Is it like Malkovich?
Yeah, Jojo Vic. Just imagine your friend saying, why do you keep saying Jojo Vic? She's great.
Lilu! Yeah, I know, multipass. It's like whenever I am having to show some sort of ID, I always want to just go, multipass, multipass.
Woo! Made it! I was so afraid I wasn't going to make this flight, so I sent David here to come and pick up my boarding pass. But now David has to go. Thank you. Bye. I am Corbin Dallas.
And this is?
Lilu Dallas Multipass.
Yeah. Multipass. Lila, Multipass. She knows it's Multipass. Lilu Dallas, my wife. We're newlywed.
Yes, and we should do one episode just on taxis or taxi drivers or vehicles or cars, because this one has Bruce Willis as basically a taxi driver.
Yeah.
And of course, it was a taxi driver in a Total Recall, this kind of cab-like thing. And the real guy who claimed to be a taxi driver said, well, why are you driving in this robot one? I have a family to feed and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good.
I mean, even just the apartment that Bruce Willis has.
The
future where it's so small that you've got, do you want to describe it a bit?
Oh, well, it's sort of like one of those Tokyo hotel rooms almost, where it's like, the length of or the width of a broom closet and, the shorter than a garage for sure. But yeah, isn't there like a bed, not a Murphy bed, but I think the bed is like a drawer. I think it like pulls out like a drawer, and then the fridge is like either right on top of it or very close to it, And I think there's all of those sort of elements are on one wall, and then you've just got a wall on the other side about like 3 to 4 feet away.
Yeah.
I love when that guy comes to hold him up, knocks on his door, and he wants to hold him up. And then Bruce Willis just sort of like smacks him around and disarms him and takes his gun and tells him to hit the road.
Yeah.
There you go.
Give me the gas!
That's a very dangerous gun. Maybe you better let me hang on to this one for you, huh? You don't mind, do you?
No.
You sure?
No. Take it. I don't need it!
That's a very nice hat.
You like it?
Next film on my list, even though it's not as genre as it probably as the other ones, is Mercury Rising. You just have a young a kid, maybe 10, 12 years old, that has autism and is able to see some sort of formula or be able to figure something out that puts him at risk because it's something that is a major secret or something within the government. And I think Bruce Willis's character is trying to protect him from the forces that want to do him harm. And I think it's sort of genre enough.
Sounds like it.
Have it on my list. But the next big one for me is Armageddon. And just imagine 12 Monkeys in 95, Fifth Element in 97, and Armageddon in 98. This string of films, and then eventually Sixth Sense in 99 and so on. But we're on to Armageddon. So what do you think? Are you a fan? Because some people don't like it as much as others.
Well, that's the year that the two meteor films came out, the asteroid films.
I prefer Deep Impact myself.
So do I. So do I. I'm a big fan of Deep Impact. Armageddon is definitely sort of has that blockbuster feel. I think Deep Impact took itself in a good way more seriously, and Armageddon was just trying to be an Independence Day type of blockbuster.
How big?
It's what we call a global killer. Nothing would survive, not even bacteria.
The United States government just asked us to save the world. Anybody want to say no?
You think we'll get hazard pay out of this?
We'll do it.
They've made a few requests, though.
Such as?
Oscar here has got some outstanding parking tickets. Max would like you to bring back 8-track tapes. Not sure if that's going to work.
Yeah, one more thing. None of them want to pay taxes again. Ever.
I'm marrying you.
You bet you are.
Bruce Willis. Billy Bob Thornton. Liv Tyler. Ben Affleck. Will Patton. And Steve Buscemi.
Whoa! This is so much fun, it's freaky!
All the time in the world.
We have 18 minutes to zero barrier.
Is all they've got.
We all gotta die, right? I'm the guy who gets to do it saving the world.
Yeah! Do you think I'm gonna quit? We never quit!
Armageddon. A Jerry Bruckheimer production, directed by Michael Bay.
But it is amazing when you like look at that cast, and of course it's a Michael Bay film and it's Jerry Bruckheimer producing. So I actually started to rewatch it today because I think I've only ever seen it on AMC, you know, so sans swearing and with copious ads. So I started to rewatch it about 2 hours ago. And, I was immediately struck with how, it was not a very, bright film, shall we say. Like even within the first 20 minutes, it felt like, that doesn't make sense. Even when the Bruce Willis character who finds his daughter, played by Liv Tyler, in bed with Ben Affleck, he goes and he grabs like a shotgun and they're on an oil rig. They're on an oil rig out in the ocean and Bruce Willis is firing off a shotgun in every direction on this oil rig, which didn't seem to me to make a lot of sense. It's Bruce Willis and it's a big dumb blockbuster. So that's awesome. And it's certainly, still being played on AMC and certainly I'm sure made a shitload of money.
Yeah. Heroic. Bruce Willis's character is very heroic. Billy Bob Thornton is good in it. Also, yeah.
Steve Buscemi is in it.
Oh my goodness.
I am the walrus.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where it's like almost everybody on screen is somebody.
Yeah, and it's not as jingoistic or as bad a film as some people may make out. Plus the song itself was a huge,
right.
huge yeah. song.
Yeah, even just watching the first 10 minutes or so, I already had the Aerosmith song playing in my head, you know, like that's the impact of that film. And I'm going to watch the rest of it too, because sometimes you just need a film like that to sort of turn your brain off to and let it wash over you, you know, let the explosions happen.
The fuck is he talking about?
And I'd forgotten about Breakfast of Champions.
I missed it, but it's a 4.5 rating, which is about as low a rating as I've seen on IMDb.
Yeah.
I've never read the book, but I think there's enough odd, strange reality, odd things that make it almost fit within our genre kind of thing.
Oh, for sure.
You don't know what's real and what isn't.
Yeah, with Vonnegut. That's right.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's one that I'm looking forward to checking out. I've decided that Christy and I are going to be doing a Bruce Willis either rewatch or checking out things that we haven't seen. So she's a big Vonnegut fan, so I think we'll look into Breakfast of Champions at some point.
You have a secret, but you don't want to tell me.
I see dead people walking around like regular people.
I don't see anything. Are you sure they're there?
They're everywhere.
Me to do things for them.
I think that they know that you're one of these very rare people who can see them, so you need to help them.
What if they don't want to help?
I don't think that's the way it works.
I need help for sure.
Not every gift.
Is anyone there?
Is a blessing.
No!
The sixth sense.
Please make them leave.
Now, you know, I would have thought, it's funny how things get scrambled in your memory. I would have thought Sixth Sense was pre-Armageddon, but it's not. I mean, it's only a year difference, but, you know, it's one of the things that I like about Willis's decisions with scripts, where, and you see a lot of, you know, big names in Hollywood do this, where they will do a film like Armageddon to pay the bills for a few years, and then they will do a smaller film that has, you know, that's a great script. And I don't, I mean, nobody could have foreseen the success that The Sixth Sense had. Geez, I'm trying to remember if it came out the same year as The Blair Witch Project, but those two films really did reinvigorate the horror genre at the end of the century, the last century.
Yeah, The Sixth Sense is worth a rewatch for any of our fans who may have watched it when it first came out. And it's, since you already have seen it, and you know that it's sort of hard to watch something again when you already know the ending. But the part of it is the as Garrett Wong's character, Anton Kim on Voyager, said to the journey. So it's actually the journey of the film and what M. Night Shyamalan did. It's so understated and so brilliantly done. And I was one person who did not see, and we did say spoiler alert, but this is one we're not going to spoil. But there is a change at the end that I did not see coming. Now, my wife's mother and my wife went to see it. And Alexa's mother mentioned during the film, by the way, and then she just said what she thought the ending was.
Right.
So now, sort of spoiled it or something.
Now,
like
did
that.
They see it at a point in which the you know, there'd already been coverage about the O. Henry ending?
No. Well, they did not know what was going
to
happen.
Okay, because I have to say, I did see it. Yeah. I did see it sort of where maybe this is even the first time I'd heard discussions about spoilers, and spoiler alerts was maybe back for this film. And I do remember the press saying things like, you know, there's a big surprise ending, there's a big O. Henry ending. So because I knew even that much, I was sort of looking for it. And then that, I found that became a thing with all of his films. It's like you immediately almost stop paying attention to the story and you start looking for where's the twist?
The Twilight Zone, where it's a cookbook kind of thing. Sorry, I spoiled the episode.
To serve man. It is a great film and it is really understated. Also, Toni Collette is in that. I think it might be her first North American film, or it's definitely an early North American film after Muriel's Wedding, which was her big breakout film, but in Australia. And I just love Toni Collette. Our next film on our list in terms of Bruce Willis's genre films is one of my favorites, superhero films. And at some point, I'm hoping in the summer, we can do a list of our top 10 superhero films. This would definitely be there for me. This film, I don't know. I think a friend of mine might have recommended it. And the nice thing was he didn't tell me anything about it other than you should watch this film. Oh, and this is also...
This is M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
Follow-up to Sixth Sense. And, you know, as a follow-up, pretty good, eh?
I know what's going through your mind right now. You're searching for meaning in all of this. No one thing. 131 people died so you could finally understand the destiny for which you were born. Are you ready for the truth?
Yeah, and again, very understated. And beautifully acted by Bruce Willis. I have not seen it for a while. I've seen two other films in the trilogy, but I've not gone back to watch Unbreakable for a while. And I probably, if we do our superhero favorites, I will definitely give it a rewatch. I love the fact that, you know, you don't even realize that basically you are watching a superhero film for the vast majority of it.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
There's that scene early on, it's not really a spoiler, but I think it's quite brilliant, where eventually it's dawned on him, or someone has mentioned that, you know what, you're pretty much someone who never gets sick. Like you're just like nothing can phase you or affect you. And then Willis goes to his supervisor and says, you know what, I was just wondering, how many days off have I ever been sick? And what the supervisor goes back, finds out all the stuff and says, okay, I just you actually have not missed one day of work in however number of years. And the supervisor took that, or manager took that, as Willis's character trying to get a raise. Because he's saying how, whereas Willis isn't, David Willis is playing a character named David Dunn, and he is just trying to find out if he's actually ever been sick or not. He's not angling for more money.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a beautiful little scene.
And I like the touch too that, his instinct, because again, he's not aware of the fact that he sort of has certain powers. But his natural instinct is to work as a security guard, where he can take care of people and he can protect people. And as a security guard, in inclement weather, he wears this rain poncho, and the rain poncho is in effect his uniform and sort of his cape, his superhero cape. Mm. And I just love that touch. There was a very nice subtlety to it.
Well, that was a film that was far better than, and M. Night Shyamalan eventually had the one with Mel Gibson, Signs.
Right.
Actually, after looking at some of the stuff that M. Night Shyamalan came out with after, made Signs look even a better film than it was, because eventually there are other films that he did just didn't quite make it, but Signs is a pretty strong film, even though it's not a Bruce Willis connection. It's definitely Unbreakable. Which I did not like as much as Sixth Sense, and I felt it was. But then over the years, I've grown to appreciate it more because it's actually that good a film.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's some of the later M. Night films that are, you can almost like just lose the final 10 minutes. You don't need the twist. And the film I'm thinking of in particular is The Village. I don't know if you've seen that one or not, David. Okay. I mean, it is quite good, but then the final 10 minutes gets a little bit ham-handed in sort of trying to present the twist. And you don't need it. It's a fine film on its own, and I won't get into it. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I don't want to give improper information about it, but or incorrect information. But those early films like Sixth Sense and Unbreakable certainly do stand up. The next one on our list,
you might want to talk about this because I have a feeling that this is near and dear to your heart.
It is, and it's funny that you pick up on that because it really is. Well, first of all, Sin City is the film. He plays Hartigan, a police detective, with a heart of gold, and it was based on Frank Miller's graphic novel series or comic series that's really like based on like film noir. Mm-hmm. So the entire visuals for the graphics for the comic series are black and white. And in fact, it's that kind of black and white where it's white on black paper. So the page is predominantly black rather than predominantly white. It has a great look to it. And Robert Rodriguez was the director or co-director for it. And they really brought the graphic novel together beautifully. Like it looks just like the comic. And it has this whole hard-boiled, like over-the-top, hard-boiled film noir thing going on. It's a really
some narration, right? There's some actual narration going on.
I believe so, yeah. And it's what they did was they it's sort of an anthology within itself with all of the stories happening in Sin City. he's great in it. He is so good. He being Bruce Willis, of course, as Hartigan. And what I picked up on, because this is something that Frank Miller loves. He loves that old gritty, sort of, you know, like man's man type of ethos. And, the character Hartigan is very close, or it felt to me very close to, Frank Miller's version of Batman from The Dark Knight Returns, which he created in the mid-1980s. And that version was sort of the thing that recreated Batman for the world, where it made him super edgy and somewhat psychotic and super dark, like thus the dark and Dark Knight. So this Hartigan character felt a lot like that Batman version. And it actually, my takeaway from the film, like I love it from beginning to end, but my takeaway was I want Bruce Willis to play an older Batman at some point. And unfortunately, I don't think that will ever happen, but I think he would have been ideal to play the Batman from Frank Miller's Dark Knight.
Everything's gone straight to hell. I've been suckered into betraying the only friend I've got. Put her in the hands of a murdering rapist I thought I'd put down for good. Suckered by a spoiled brat, son of a senator. It's all gone to hell.
Yeah, I think Sin City was just fabulous. One of the things, and of course, Benicio del Toro was great. Brittany Murphy, Clive Owen. Now, what was a standout for me, and of course, Bruce Willis, Mickey Rourke, Jessica Alba, so on. But Elijah Wood.
Oh, so creepy.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
How do you
do
that role? How do you do after whatever it was? Was he in The Hobbit, right?
Yes.
And then he does this role. It's like, wow.
Yeah. 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 It was really disturbing. Oh, and I guess it was Lord of the Rings, not Hobbit.
I'm sorry, excuse me. That's what I meant.
Yeah,
Lord of
the Rings. Which, but he was a Hobbit.
Yes, absolutely. He was the star of those three films, which were sensational. And then he plays this character in Sin City, which was about as far away from the character he played in the Lord of the Rings. Frodo, I guess.
Yeah. And I want to say, too, about Sin City, it's one of those few films where the world of the film visually was so stunning, and I was so caught up in it, that at not one point during the film did my mind wander. You know, usually if I'm watching a film and, like, a character, like, drops off a letter in the mailbox, I'll think of, like, oh, man, I've got to mail that letter. You know, yeah. I'll at some point jump out of the film. But with Sin City, I was so immersed. I was also like that with Peter Jackson's King Kong. I was so caught up in that film. And that doesn't often happen where I'm so thoroughly immersed. Anyway, that was Sin City from 2005.
Yeah. And other than Elijah Wood, also a very dark, very bad character that really gets under your skin is the one played by Benicio del Toro. And that's also a standout. And the whole idea, from what I recall, it was in black and white, right? Like there was no color in the...
No, I think there were a couple of moments. There was a character called That Yellow Bastard, which is also, which is also a, one of the story segments the film. He was yellow, I believe.
Things don't work out well for him.
No, not at all. No, so That Yellow Bastard, I think, was yellow, and I think there were a couple of like splashes of like blood occasionally, but primarily was all black and white.
And it worked very well. It's almost like Darkman and some other. Every so often, you got a film that just works perfectly in mostly black and white than using color. Now,
and Mickey Rourke was perfectly cast too.
He's very good in that.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't see this one. The next one on my list is from 2006, The Astronaut Farmer, which gets a 6.3 rating, which is one of the lower ones for... Have you heard or have seen The Astronaut?
No, I was, as I was going through Bruce Willis's filmography, I saw that and I was like, oh, I do not recall that. I had a look at the synopsis and it did not ring a bell at all.
No worries. Let's move on because we've got basically 7 minutes left, but we'll obviously go a bit longer than our 15-minute plan. The next one, and this one I'm afraid I've only seen bits of, but it's rated very highly, and I'm sure that it's something that I would like if I got around to seeing it. And that's also tied in with the next one. But did you want to talk about Grindhouse at all?
Well, sure. I actually do quite like the Grindhouse films. So Grindhouse was the double bill put together by Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez, which was sort of celebrating their love of those low budget 70s exploitation films. So Grindhouse consisted of Planet Terror and Death Proof. So Planet Terror was Rodriguez's film, his contribution to Grindhouse, and Death Proof was Tarantino's film. And Planet Terror basically is a sort of a zombie story. Rose McGowan is incredible in that. She ends up losing a leg and replacing the leg with a machine gun. Bruce Willis plays Lieutenant Muldoon. I definitely need to rewatch it. It's gross. It's and lots of fun.
I'm walking out of here with a shit ray. Let us go.
Tell me why we should.
Because I earned it.
How you figure that?
You want the story? I'll spin it for you quick. The termites nest, the caves on the Afghan border. Me and my men walking around with our dicks in our hands and our balls in our throats, looking for America's most wanted.
Bin Laden.
Yeah, for once, our intel was right on the money. I come around a corner, bam, there he is, looking me right in the eyes.
Wait, you killed Bin Laden?
I put two in his heart, one in his computer.
So that was you?
Yeah. That was me.
Sounds good. So let's move on. This is one that I actually like, but it's not rated that highly, is Surrogates from 2009, because it stars Bruce Willis, but also has one of my favorite actresses, Rosamund Pike.
Oh, yes. She's great.
And I do like the idea of this, of taking your consciousness or your what makes you who you are, and either download it or be able to be in some, be act like a surrogate or have it into a robot body or do something like that. It's been a while since I've seen the film, so I'm a bit light on what happens. It just seemed like it flowed well, it worked well. It just didn't quite have the power or the things of other ones like Looper, Sin City, or Unbreakable, or The Sixth Sense. But it's not an awful. It doesn't sound like the greatest recommendation for watching the film. But it actually is worth seeing. And if you are a Rosamund Pike film fan, because I do like her in the movie Doom. And I think she's been in other films. I do like her in the Jack Reacher film with Tom Cruise and so on. So she's just an excellent actress. And I prefer Doom over Surrogates. But I think Surrogates might be worth another look, I think.
Yeah, I think I will actually look for that. I did want to mention as well that in 2007, there was... the fourth sequel to Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard. In that was Justin Long, Kevin Smith, Timothy Oliphant was the villain. And I believe, oh, David, help me out here. Mary Winstead, what's her last
name? Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
That's right. Mary Elizabeth Winstead played his daughter in it.
I may have to give that another look, because that one I think was one of the stronger sequels in it. Because that's the one with that's this estranged son who knows computers, or am I getting?
That's the one. Well, that's
that, I thought it was a very strong film. Yeah.
And Kevin Smith was hilarious in it. Who I love everything Kevin Smith has done.
So he's more of a Star Wars guy.
Star Wars guy. Who is this man?
He's my...
Hey, dump truck. I'm not his dad. I'm a cop.
How about that?
Oh, I'm a police officer. Cop. I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Why'd you bring a cop into my command center?
No. Command center. It's a basement.
It's a command center.
Don't help McLean. I can explain.
Just tell us what you know about Thomas Gabriel, all right? That's why we came here.
Thomas Gabriel. That's okay. Cool. I didn't know. I'm sorry.
Get out! I want you out of here, right now!
Hey, why?
Hey, hey, calm down. Just calm down, big boy.
You calm down. This is my house.
You're going to tell me what I want to know, or I'm going to beat you to death in your own house.
And Kevin Smith actually directed a film with Tracy Morgan and Bruce Willis called Cop Out, which I don't think did very well. But there's some hilarious stories about Bruce Willis hanging out with Kevin Smith and how Kevin Smith was totally intimidated because he loves Bruce Willis. So he was, but he was like, you know, it's like I'm sitting beside the coolest man on earth. You know, how do I do anything when I'm sitting beside Bruce motherfucking Willis?
Well, even stars have their our fanboys or fangirls. Remember when we were talking about how Jason Momoa had kind of a man crush on Josh Brolin?
Yeah, yeah.
That there are these stars. Kevin Smith was no slouch, and he's done a lot of things, and he is fairly well known, but he himself has his own, like everyone sure. should have a
yeah.
you know, wish well, to meet Bruce Willis.
Well, you know how, you know, and in terms of music, you know, Tom Waits, I think most people think of as like probably one of the coolest people on earth.
Yeah.
And so there's a story about how Jacob Dylan of Wallflowers fame, also son of Bob Dylan, was sort of starstruck by Tom Waits. And, but, you know, he introduced himself and the two started getting along. And I think he said, why don't you come over sometime? And Tom Waits did. And while he was there, Bob Dylan came by and Tom Waits became starstruck. It's like, that's your dad. That's Bob Dylan. He's like, yeah, it was no big deal. It's just my dad. But yeah, so there you go. Everybody has somebody like that, I guess. Yeah. I wonder who it is for Bruce Willis.
I'm not sure. I have a feeling I know that one of your sort of starstruck with any member, past, present, or future of the Beatles, and we do have to work in eventually a Beatles reference in this podcast.
I actually had one earlier, and I forgot about it, and it may be gone, but yeah.
We might have to add it to post. So we got about a minute 20 left, but that's not the end of the, that's just a 50 minute mark.
All right.
We can go a bit longer and we are kind of getting towards the end because this might be his strong of his last 10 years. Cause this film came out in the one we're going to talk about came out in 2012. So that's, we're recording this in 2022. So this is 10 years ago and this made a bit of a splash and is one of his stronger films is Looper.
So you're me in 30 years.
So I'm staring into your eyes. It's too strange.
And your face looks backwards. Do you know what's gonna happen? You done all this already? As me?
I don't want to talk about time travel.
We both know how this has to go down. So why don't you do what old men do and die?
Why don't you just take your little gun out from between your legs and do it? Boy.
In the future, time travel is outlawed. Used only in secret by the largest criminal organizations. When they need someone gone and they want to erase any trace of the target ever existing, they use specialized assassins like me, called loopers.
You're a looper?
You know what we do? And the only rule is never let your target escape, even if your target is you.
Looper, it's been a while. It's been 10 years since I've actually seen it. So I'm even trying, other than the idea, the concept of it being involving time travel, the idea that this person or whoever it was, the son or the younger person, someone would show up in this cornfield, and they would have a thing on their head and they would basically, your job is once this whoever it is shows up, your job is to shoot that person or dispose of them. which is just such an odd and strange concept. And that's really all I remember it, other than, of course, you know that what's going to happen. The person's going to show up is either you from the future or your own father or someone that you know, and you're not going to go through it. Sort of like the Transporter, the Transporter film where Jason Statham decides to open up the trunk of the car, and part of his rules were not to look at the package or to do anything. So here was someone, I think, in Looper who was supposed to do something but didn't, and what entails after that. But I definitely have to see it again to try to understand or follow the. And I can't remember the actor that played the
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes, who was really good. Like I really like him as an actor. Like
I do, and Emily Blunt was also in it. We both we're both big fans of Emily Blunt.
Oh my goodness.
And Jeff Daniels as well, who is on a lot of my lists. Like, well, he was in Purple Rose of Cairo and Newsroom, and I guess currently he is playing. Who's the main character in To Kill a Mockingbird?
Holy short memories!
Oh, Atticus Finch?
Right, he's playing Atticus Finch on
Of course.
On Broadway.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I'd heard about that. That's something that Electron would love to see at some point.
Heard to...
What I want to do is I want to hear what you have to say about Looper.
Well, I would echo everything you said, basically. I loved it when it came out. It was lauded as being, you know, one of the best sci-fi films of you know, a couple of years there in the early 2010s. And it really lived up to that, I thought, to all that praise. And again, great cast. And that's the thing, you know, I find that a lot of Bruce Willis's choices in terms of scripts in the past 10 years have been excellent. You know, around the same time, I'm just wanting to double check the actual year here. Also in 2012, he did Moonrise Kingdom, the Wes Anderson film, which is hilarious and beautiful.
Adding that to my list because it does have almost this magic kind of
magic realism
to it.
Yeah. And
that's a good film.
And that's the thing. That's what I mean. Obviously, you want you know, everybody out there to be well. But what it saddens me that, you know, based on some of the decisions he's been making, like Moonrise Kingdom, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to get to see Bruce Willis do these wonderful, quirky sort of films as he moves through his later years. And it looks like we are not going to get that opportunity. So we'll have to enjoy the ones that we have.
Yeah, certainly for choice of roles and what he's able to do with those roles, Bruce Willis has done a great job. Every so often, you know, those act like Tom Hanks, who can almost do nothing wrong. The only thing that was a bit odd, and it's not really his fault, was the Lady Killers reboot, which the original film with Alec Guinness is such a great British film of, I think, the 1950s. Remember the Lady Killers?
Yeah.
And you would think that with him in it and it being a Coen Brothers film, that you would think that it would have been great considering how many great films the Coen Brothers have done. And Tom Hanks with Philadelphia, with Forrest Gump, even more recently with Captain Phillips, Sully, and a whole string of films. Like, Tom Hanks always delivers. So our podcast about Bruce Willis and retrospective has turned into a Tom Hanks one, but that's okay. nothing wrong with that. Oh, and by the way, let's just finish off these ones.
Now, sure.
I have not seen.
Yeah, we're winding down.
I did see the original G.I. Joe, Rise of the Cobra. And there was a G.I. Joe in 2013 called G.I. Joe Retaliation, where he played General Joe Colton. I assume it's a similar character. Maybe he's new to that film. I'm not sure if he was in the original G.I. Joe one. But I don't know if you've seen that or the Sin City, A Dame.
I have to say, Sin City, A Dame for A Dame. Let me start again. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. Not quite as good as the original. And I believe he reprises Heart again, but I think most of that is done because, spoiler, the character dies in the first one. So I guess it was like flashbacks. So there's not a lot of him in it, But it's what you get is great. I love the character again, and then we get the continuation of the Unbreakable trilogy with 2019's Glass, which brings together his character. Now, David, what's the name of the guy from that was in Split, who was also in the X-Men, and James McAvoy? We get that trilogy sort of wrapping up with these three characters that we've seen previously.
Have you seen Glass?
I have. I would like to see it again because it's been a little bit of time.
Do you recommend it? Because I missed that one, but it did look, I mean, the previews looked like it would be good.
Yeah, it's a nice universe. I was blown away by Split, actually. When Split begins, about basically a killer with like multiple split personalities. I think there's like 19 different variations on the self that I've already forgotten it, David. Was it James?
McAvoy.
Yeah. James McAvoy's performance in it is just incredible. So that film is going on, and I didn't realize that it was attached to the Unbreakable universe. And as the film goes on, you do realize, and it's like, oh, fuck yes. And then Glass sort of brings it all together. I really like all three of those films. I probably prefer them, like, you know, the first one best, the second one second best, and then Glass third. But it's still a great watch, and it's great to have Bruce back playing that character.
Yeah, it's such a great concept and a great idea. So that's what we've got for Bruce Willis, and he's done, of course, stuff outside of the science fiction, fantasy, and horror ones. And some people count things like Die Hard or Red, but that's more like spy or more action and doesn't quite have the same science fiction, fantasy, or horror elements. Go ahead.
Sorry, David. I just wanted to say there is one that I almost forgot that I just noticed my notes here. This I would have loved to have seen. In 2015, Bruce Willis was in the Broadway version of Misery. And he plays the writer character. And the reviews were quite good, as I recall. So I don't know if there's any video of that. But can you imagine Bruce Willis playing the James Caan?
Caan was the guy who was exercising with the typewriter, lifting it up and down to build muscle. But James Caan, that's one of his best roles, actually, in Misery.
Yeah. So can you imagine Bruce Willis playing that role on Broadway?
I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can, because I think he would be great in it. Like he could do anything.
Definitely. Well, I think it would be appropriate to, first of all, say, you know, hopefully Mr. Willis stays well, does well.
Yeah.
If we're lucky, maybe we will get to see more from him. If not, we should be thankful for the great body of work that we have here. And in a very respectful way, I would say, yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers.
Absolutely. Well said. There is a website called What to Watch, whattowatch.com. What to Watch, Bruce Willis, the top 10 movie quotes. The actor is a one-man walking quip machine, but what are your favorite lines? This is by Heidi Rice. It was published just 7 days ago. So these are his top 10. Number one, of course, is yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. That is the number one. Number two is 9 million terrorists in the world, and I gotta kill one with feet smaller than my sister. Which, of course, we know that's from Die Hard.
Yeah.
Number three, I don't effing believe this. Another basement, another elevator. How can the same shit happen to the same guy twice? Which is Die Hard 2. There was a number four, Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead. And that is in Pulp Fiction, And the question is, who the heck was Zed? Matt Farrell says, you just killed a helicopter with a car. And John McClane says, I was out of bullets. Number six, you would recognize, I ain't going to kill him. I'm just going to take a foot off of him. A man can work with one foot. And that's, of course, from Armageddon.
It's a very compassionate point of view.
Yes. Hey, well, as far as I'm concerned, progress peaked with frozen pizza, which is a line from, it says here in Die Hard 2.
I can get behind that sentiment.
Yep. A welcome to the party, pal, which was from Die Hard. And I think you may have mentioned this earlier. Maybe you need a drink to ease the pain of being wrong is a line he had from Striking Distance. In the final, the 10th quote from this article that I had mentioned was from whattowatch.com, written by Heidi Rice, which was just published just 7 days ago. The number 10 quote is, now don't get me wrong, I'm all for conversation, but maybe you could just shut up for a moment. And that is from The Fifth Element. So those are sort of what Heidi Rice had listed as her top 10 movie quotes. But certainly Bruce Willis in his various films has been quite quotable.
Definitely.
So let me just see where we're going to finish off this podcast. Thank you so much for suggesting this episode, just because of the recent news about Bruce Willis. This was recorded in early April, and we had just heard in late March about Bruce Willis's situation, about him having to retire from acting due to having aphasia. And thanks, Troy, for suggesting that we should just quickly talk about some of our favorite films of Bruce Willis that are, you know, science fiction, fantasy, and horror. So that is our Bruce Willis retrospective. Where there's a Willis, there's a way.
Remember to look for us on all of our socials, your fave podcast provider. Our website is numeric2of.ca. Facebook, we are Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. Please tell a friend, like and subscribe if you can. We appreciate any sort of feedback that you want to give us as well.
I am David Klink.
And I am Troy Harkin.
See you all for our next episode of Two Old Farts
Talk Sci-Fi.